Please silence all electronic devices.
This is just the beginning. I mean, they obviously are going to have to do a lot more. This is an unprecedented crisis of an unprecedented magnitude.
I think the only thing that he loved better or equal to his Tar Heels was the North Carolina Senate and the tradition that that offered.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the bunker of sweatshirts in the northern reaches of Wake County, back at you again. This is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Thank you for tapping that play button. My name is Jeff Tiberi, and it is time again, as the work week is over, to review the week in North Carolina politics, even though the week isn't totally over, even though state lawmakers will be returning for a rare Saturday gaveling in. Well, we're going to talk about a relief package that those House members and senators have been working on in recent days. We'll review the latest unemployment figures, unemployment application figures out of North Carolina. They are truly staggering and just depressing, to be perfectly honest. And we'll also have some reflections of a well-known, powerful, much respected state lawmaker who passed away on Friday. That's Tony Rand. Here for the conversation, as usual, are Becky Gray with the conservative John Locke Foundation and Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch. Hello.
Good to be back with you guys.
Hello.
We are recording this conversation early Friday afternoon. Lawmakers returned to Raleigh on Tuesday with the intention of passing a sizable COVID-19 relief package. However, they have yet to approve legislation that would disperse federal funds. The chambers differed by about $500 million on how much aid to appropriate immediately. Saturday committee meetings and votes are now expected. Those are rare. Are lawmakers doing due diligence here, or is this kind of a bureaucratic blunder?
I don't have any objection to them spending time on getting things right and negotiating it out. It's complicated stuff. I do wish that the Senate had some process ahead of time. They presented a bill that was completely written in secret, and I think that's held back the process. This is a really difficult thing to follow. It's difficult for the media to follow. It's difficult for advocates and certainly for the general public to follow. So as much transparency as possible would have been nice. I mean, we've had committee meetings where, you know, we're taking voice votes with people all in different rooms participating virtually. It's a very difficult process to negotiate. I think we could have been a little more assertive in terms of transparency and getting things done ahead of time. It doesn't surprise me that it's going to take them a while to iron out the details that differ over at this point.
I think this is absolutely a case of due diligence and very careful review of things. You know, what we've seen from the committee meetings prior to this that we had in the House was presentations from different state agencies explaining the needs that were there, anticipated needs. We've seen the Senate review that as well. And the conversations in the committee meetings since then and the discussion that we've seen from the General Assembly through this whole process, I think, has been one of a real effort to get it right. And, you know, they face a lot of the difficulty that the governor faces and a lot of difficulty that the president faces in that this has come upon us very suddenly. There are people who are in dire need who have come across this dire need very suddenly. How do you get the funds and the resources to folks who are suffering as quickly as you can, but to make sure that those dollars are spent well? And, you know, so it's a complicated process, but it's also been a very thoughtful process. And I think that it is not bureaucratic mix-ups here or delays in anything. I think it's absolutely an effort on the part of all members of the General Assembly, both Republicans and Democrats, and certainly from the governor's office as well. So I commend all of them. To Rob's point, it has been difficult to do this virtually. And there are things that, I mean, you know, the description I've heard over and over, even from you, Jeff, is, you know, it's just kind of weird down there. It's very different. But, you know, these are different times and these are emergency times. And I think they're doing the best they can under the circumstances. And, you know, we've all had to make adjustments. I mean, you know, the three of us have adjusted to doing our weekly interviews online and virtually, and everybody else has too. So I think given all of the restrictions that they're dealing with, I think they're all doing a really commendable job.
I was just going to say one thing that is clear is that this is just the beginning. I mean, they obviously are going to have to do a lot more. This is an unprecedented crisis of an unprecedented magnitude. And it's nice what they're doing. There's some nice expenditures that are being made to deal with some immediate crises. But there's lots of stuff that's not being dealt with. It's going to require much, much more effort, many more state dollars, many more federal dollars to come. And so I think we need to be prepared, and they need to be prepared to you know, keep their noses to the grindstone.
Well, I think they are. I agree with that, Rob, completely. And we're even hearing that in some of these discussions about, you know, perhaps one body or one member suggests, no, we ought to be spending a little bit more in a particular area. One of those responses have been, let's get what we need immediately. We're going to, I'm even hearing, you know, they may be back in a matter of just a couple weeks to revisit this. Of the money that they're talking about spending right now, of course, this is all distributing the money that's coming from the federal government. North Carolina's share of that is about $3.5 billion. We expect there'll be even more coming from the federal government to distribute across North Carolina. So I think you're absolutely right, this is the beginning of a process. And, you know, I think that's another reason why they're trying to be so careful about it, is there are, as we've seen from this from the very beginning, there's a lot of unknowns, and this is unfolding in some cases by the hour. So I think that's another reason why they're being careful with this. But also, Rob, to your point, you're absolutely right. There's going to be more money, and there's going to be more discussion of this.
Let me jump in here. I'm going to add a little bit of numerical context and try to work our way back toward a follow-up question. The state initially was allocated about $6 billion in federal relief. What is remaining at this point is $3.5 billion. And the fundamental hang-up, or the biggest hang-up between the House and the Senate this week, has been how much of that $3.5 billion to disperse right now. The House wanted to initially appropriate about $500 million more. Also, just want to briefly acknowledge the fact that what we're talking about is strictly federal funding. The state has a lot of money in its coffers, specifically about $3.4 billion. But that money is not being implemented right now. The approach is to use federal money, and state lawmakers are saving that because we're a month away from hurricane season, because there is anywhere from a $2.5 to a $4 billion budget hole looming. So those are just that's some of the backdrop to all of this. And it's also, I do think, important to point out the fact that we have seen really a lot of wide bipartisan agreement in recent days. The Senate package, which is not the final package, but the House did its own version, the Senate did its own version, and the Senate version had all the Republicans sign on as primary bill sponsors, in addition to 16 of the 21 Democrats sign on as sponsors. And that's very rare. So I just wanted to add in some of that context. Here's the question. From each of you, what's the best provision that you expect to see in a final bill? And what's the biggest expected omission? Becky?
Without going into the line items of this, because for every one of these, I mean, we've got money going to DHHS for food banks, support for foster care. We've got stuff going to the university for transition to online education. You know, I would be hard-pressed to find something in here that is the very best. And I'd also, you know, have a hard time saying what is the omission, because this is an ongoing process, and what may be omitted right now may very well be included in the next go-round in, again, you know, in a matter of weeks. I think overall, the thing that I like about the approach that they're taking is not spending all of the money at one time and being very careful at looking at, are there other funding sources for some of these things? I mean, you know, what we don't want to do is double or triple funding for something when a single funding amount would get the job done, and being careful about not rushing, not so that we don't waste any of this money, and that we make sure that it is, it's all spent well and where it needs to be done and in a timely fashion. On the downside, or the thing that I would argue about is, we don't know what, Jeff, you alluded to an expected revenue shortfall, but we don't really know what the depth of that is going to be. As a fiscal conservative, I think one of the things that I would have liked to have seen them do is to hang back maybe a little bit even more to see what those tax revenues are going to be coming in, and where the state funds may need to supplement the federal funds, and just kind of hang back a little bit until we had a greater picture of what the real revenue picture is going to look like.
Well, obviously, I think the House is on fire, and we need not to scrimp on putting as much water from the fire hose on it as possible at this point. We're in an immediate crisis. There are, you know, there's some good stuff in the legislation. It looks like maybe we're going to have some minor tweaks to our bottom of the barrel unemployment insurance system that has really held us back, and we've had the worst system in the country. Lawmakers are at least, it looks like, maybe acknowledging at least a small part of that even in the Senate, that they're agreeing that, well, yeah, those bottom of the barrel benefits lowest in the country were probably a bad idea. And the fact that only 8% of workers who were unemployed were getting benefits is probably a bad idea. So they may make some improvements in how you calculate eligibility and benefits. I'm a little concerned about what's going into the education package. The governor had a lot of stuff in there recommended that would have really helped at-risk students and targeted the folks who are, you know, disproportionately being impacted by this. That is the kids who don't have internet access, the kids who don't have the kind of skills that, you know, that the wealthier kids probably tend to have be able to bring to the table. I think we could probably be more aggressive there in terms of that. And of course, as you alluded to, the Medicaid issue. The House has actually proposed the idea of slightly expanding Medicaid, which is a great idea. The Senate didn't want to do it. I think it once again points out the absurdity of a system that, you know, denies health care to lots of hardworking people who can't reasonably be expected to buy insurance on their own. And we just know that number is going to dramatically expand.
About 1 in 5 working North Carolinians has now applied for unemployment since March 15th, more than 960,000 people in total. These are wholly unprecedented and really staggering figures. About 40% of those applicants have now received either state or federal funds, which are aimed to help them get by. I wonder about evictions and foreclosures among the other long-term ramifications. And I'm wondering, what are your long-term fears and concerns from a labor and economic standpoint? Becky?
Well, I think the longer that this goes on, the longer that people are unable to get back to work, businesses able to get back on their feet, the more and the deeper the repercussions from this are going to be. And I'm concerned about the whole economic health of North Carolina and where that's going to go. As this goes on, you know, the unemployment ranks are they're slowing down, but they're still growing. And this is not from the initial huge unemployment wave that we had with the announcement of the shutdown. This is as businesses are going out of business, are not able to keep their doors open. And, you know, that's my biggest concern, is that the longer this goes on, the deeper that hole gets and the harder it's going to be for us to climb back out of it. And people's lives are at risk with this. I mean, people's livelihoods, their ability to work. I don't think anybody wants or intends to stay on unemployment for any length of time. People want to get back to work. And I think that the governor has done an admirable job of laying out a plan to get back to work. And I hope that it moves quicker rather than slower, again, to get people back to work and get the economy going again.
Well, we're sure all rooting for that. It's obviously we're going to have to pay attention to the science. We've got to listen to our health experts. And the only thing that would be worse than, holding back is if we rush into it and then we have a new and even more devastating wave of the illness spreading. And that, talk about damage to the economy. So that's this fine balance that the people in charge have to work. I mean, obviously the unemployment system in North Carolina has been a dreadful one. We have been the bottom of the pack. It was featured in a New York Times article this week. It showed us, they had a big graph, and it showed North Carolina way out on the edge as the lowest benefits and lowest eligibility in the country. And that's a big problem. Happily, that's being at least beginning to be recognized. And happily, the federal government's stepping up to the plate to fund what we're going to need to do for people in the near term. In the long term, though, North Carolina is going to have to look at that system and make some improvements to it. And I'm also very concerned about just the whole issue of the economic stability of our state. I know we've got some money in a rainy day fund. I'm still believe very strongly that it's not going to last. And there's going to be a desperate need for additional aid to come from the federal government to the states for unemployment, for lots of things. And I'm very concerned that Mitch McConnell and some of the conservatives in Washington have been making noises about, and Trump himself, about not wanting to provide this aid to the states or to states that they don't happen to like. I think that's a grave concern. We're going to desperately need a lot more federal aid down the line, because this is a crisis that's here to with us for a prolonged period, and it's going to take a while to get back on our feet economically.
A follow-up that touches on something both of you talked about in part, which is this surge in the last week or so. We've seen About 200,000, more than 200,000 people file for unemployment. And that is by virtue of largely a wave of self-employed and freelance and sole proprietors, people who would not be eligible, are not eligible for unemployment benefits under North Carolina law. But because of the Federal CARES Act, there was money made available to some of those gig workers and those people who are not considered typical members of the labor force. So that's part of the reason we've seen this recent surge.
And partially because we've hired hundreds of more workers at the Division of Employment Security to actually process the applications. It's just a sheer matter of physics. They need more people on staff to actually handle this, all these applications, and get them processed. And I think that may explain part of it as well.
Well, and that, you know, that's an overwhelmed system that had flaws even going into it. So you add that to it, and then it adds to people's frustration as they're trying to qualify for these benefits. And I think, you know, when government comes in and shuts down your business or takes your job away from you, I think it is absolutely appropriate that they are made as whole as we can to get through this. But the answer to so many of these things, and, you know, Rob mentioned the deficiencies in the unemployment benefits, which is different than the system that has deficiencies as well. But the answer to so many of these things and these problems that people are facing is if we can get people back to work, which is the preference of what people want to do, they want to get back to work, then we don't have the problems with the unemployment lines. Then the benefits for the unemployment is not as big an issue as if people are getting their paychecks and able to provide for themselves. And then there's also the whole thing of small business and small business owners and people who have invested their life savings and their life works in businesses that are struggling to stay afloat. And so this, again, you know, Rob mentioned a balance between the public health and the economic health. And I absolutely agree with that. We need to do this safely. But we're seeing across the country where other states are opening up and opening up slowly. And so we're watching that very carefully, as we should. But so far, it seems like doing this prudently will ensure the economy to begin to get back on its feet while protecting the public safety. So I think it's time to move forward with this. I think that's what we're doing. And I think the sooner we can get people back to work, the better.
Well, obviously that's true, Becky, but people also want to stay alive. And I don't think there's any doubt that the states that have rushed forward with these immediate orders to reopen in violation of what the Trump administration is recommending have been a mistake. And I pray North Carolina doesn't go down that road. I think Governor Cooper's shown remarkable judgment and restraint in not giving in to those kinds of absurd pleas for immediately reopening everything. So let's just keep our fingers crossed that we keep listening to science and math and not to the emotions of people who really don't know what they're talking about.
There was a new poll out today from Meredith College, and it according to the poll, over 3/4 of people support an extension of Cooper's stay-at-home order, and this was – it did represent a majority from both parties. So we're going to move on. Tony Rand has died. The longtime Democratic state senator from Fayetteville was the right-hand man of Mark Basnight. Rand had a sharp and quick wit and was something of a legendary character on West Jones Street. He was 80. Do you have a story or recollection or something that comes to mind that you can share on the radio when you think about Tony Rand?
Yeah, I have some probably I couldn't say on the radio and some that I could. And it's important to remember, of course, he had a tenure in the Senate even before he was Mark Basnight's right-hand man and then later on. But he was a legendary figure. He was an amazingly – he was a brilliant man, a brilliant lawyer. He did a lot of good work. You know, he had this very rough facade to a certain extent and could be very biting and sort of a sharp wit. But I really think inside that he was kind of a softie who was trying to do the right thing for society. He believed very much in making government work as a tool to help the common good. He was very passionate about the UNC system and, obviously a Chapel Hill, bled Chapel Hill blue. And, you know, he was incredibly helpful in his later years in the Senate in keeping predatory lenders out of North Carolina, making the payday lenders go away and not letting them get back in business here, and general sort of protection of average to low and moderate income workers and consumers that was enormously helpful. He was a good man, and it's a sad day. He'll be missed.
I agree with everything Rob says, including some stories that we probably can't tell, because Tony Rand was quite a bit of a character and had a biting wit, was a true public servant for North Carolina. I think the only thing that he loved better or equal to his Tar Heels was the North Carolina Senate and the tradition that that offered, and many years as leadership in the Senate. He was also maybe the last of the moderate, business-friendly Democrat group that we used to have, that we used to see as things move further to the left and further to the right and the parties become more extreme, sort of losing that middle ground, if you will. You know, he was clearly a moderate, business-friendly Democrat, along with Mark Basnight and David Hoyle and others in the Senate. But he will be remembered well, and we're starting to see that. The announcement was just made this morning. And, you know, we're starting to see those tributes to Tony Rand. And a legislator that used to serve with him, who I spoke with this morning, I think said it well, that he was one of a kind, and I mean that in the very best and in the very best of terms. I think that describes him well.
Becky Gray is Senior Vice President at the John Locke Foundation. Rob Schofield is Director of NC Policy Watch. Enjoy your weekends.
Stay safe, guys.
You too.
Each week, we try to make some sense of what happened in North Carolina politics with our conversation, a voice from the left, that's Rob, and a voice from the right, Becky, of course. When we record our week in state politics, we call it WISP, around the office and such, but there is no office right now. You can hear a shorter version of our week in review conversations on the radio at 4:50, and you can subscribe to the WUNC Politics podcast program wherever you do your on-demand listening. Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play. On Monday, I'm scheduled to record a conversation with Dr. Mandy Cohen, the Secretary of Health and Human Services. If you've got questions or thoughts about what I should ask in that interview, feel free to find me on Twitter at J_TIBS. And friendly reminder, you know it by now, WUNC has a short-run podcast called Test It. It's dropping each weekday, and it's all about how North Carolina is responding to this pandemic. It's a really good program. I listen to it regularly, and you should as well. For Becky and Rob, I am Jeff, encouraging you to have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you soon.